Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hey girls, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Right? Excellent. So how's everything, girls? Pretty good?
I'm still cute.
Yeah. Yep.
I saw this movie, I think, Tea with the Dames. It's on Hulu, and it's Maggie Smith.
T-E-A.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Maggie Smith and other women that I forgot their names. But I was seeing, like, during kind of like the breaks, how they were going, me, 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 wow, wow. So I was like, that's why when we started this episode, I was like, oh, kind of like, you know, because loosens the muscles in your face. So, because I'm always the one that kind of stutters and, you know, powers through episodes because I don't know, my mind doesn't.
Got to get in your mouth practice.
Where's Frank? No, I'm just kidding. Ew. Gross. Anyway, we're really loving this weather. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
It's
all right. So anyway, let's go on to Chisme de la Semana. Jen, what do you have for us today?
So what I have for us today, it's something that happened at the shop. We get phone calls a lot from like people from working in Sony, Marvel, Disney, mm-hmm. like basically asking for like books and stuff like that. Well, this time around, we got in a call from Sony.
Ooh.
And they were asking for Silver Sable comics.
Mm-hmm. So anything and everything.
Anything and everything that had Silver Sable in it. The thing is that Silver Sable comics aren't worth a lot.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
They are, I guess, her first appearance is worth something. I think, like, at most $50. But because she's very much a McFarlane 90s creation.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Ah. In that time when they were kind of a dime a dozen not very good.
Yeah.
So she's very popular. If you read Spider-Man and stuff like that, you know who she is, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. She's got the looks and everything.
The looks
and stuff like that. So she's kind of a fan favorite, but she's not a pop cultural like icon.
I've heard the name, but I don't even know who that is.
I'm actually looking it up on my phone.
Yeah, I am too.
So she's an anti-hero. She's a gun for hire.
Okay.
Who sometimes helps out Spider-Man and sometimes doesn't.
Ah. I've seen this Silver Sable title in the 50 Cent section.
Yeah. Yeah. She had her own miniseries and stuff like that. But she was very much a 80s, 90s forgotten baby kind of.
She's a mercenary, hunter of war criminals, and leader of the quote-unquote Wild Pack. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah,
the way they draw her is very like X-Men 1992 with the white. I mean, come on. We don't wear white like that.
You can.
It's silver, but, you know.
I was going to say, you can, but it's a power move.
It is, definitely. But what? I like her more with the white trench coat and the white T-shirt and the jeans.
Oh,
That looks more my speed. But, yeah, this bombshell look is a little much.
Sir, are we chismeando about the fact that she's going to be the one of the villains in an upcoming TV movie?
Or is she going to have her own movie? I wonder.
Well, you know, now that Marvel and Disney have this streaming thing and they're making all this
content
like what Loki's going to have. Okay, let me just tell you that I was like, no way, no how am I giving money to another freaking streaming service.
Right?
I have Hulu. I have Netflix. I'm good. I have an antenna where I can watch TV, live TV. I'm fine. But
I don't know.
MFers at Marvel came out with this What If series.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. When I read that, I was like, I would totally pay money for that. And then I got mad that I would totally pay money for that.
Yeah, yeah. I particularly like Elseworlds, and I like those, like, when you take the same story and change it up a bit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm definitely alternate on board. Alternate universe. Yeah, alternate universes, definitely.
I mean, they're interesting and stuff like that, so it's interesting. So, they could be, I mean, Sony before had announced that they were going to be doing, whatchamacallit, like, they did the Venom movie, which is a movie straight out of the early 90s, and I love it for it. I have watched it. This movie is balls to the walls, fucking wild. Like I'm talking, like, this movie could have been made in 1995, like, up there with Spawn and, like, the Punisher and, like, the old straight to DVD superhero movies. And I enjoyed every single movie because it is, like, it's definitely the so bad it's good.
Oh, I love that feeling.
And everything. So I really liked Venom. And, like, I was surprised by how much I actually liked it.
A lot of people came into the shop talking about how surprised they were that they liked it.
Yeah. And so that was really cool. And so after that, I was like, so the Silver Sable movie was really supposed to be Silver and Black, which was her with Black Cat.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Nice. Uh-huh.
And it was going to be called Silver and Black. And then
I like that.
Yeah. Too.
It was, yeah, it sounded really cool. So that gave me a little bit more faith. But then they canceled that. And then they were planning standalone. They said that they were thinking of standalone movies for them. So this is more of the fact that I think they are definitely going with the standalone movie thing. Mm. How they're going to pull it off, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, because Spider-Man is Sony. And right. Sony worked with Marvel to get, like, Spider-Man Homecoming and stuff like
and
that.
And this new Far Away from Home or whatever.
Uh-huh, Far from Home.
Far from Home, yeah.
Yeah. So there is that, but they still have the rights to everything else that is Spider-Man related, which is why they could do the Venom movie.
Right.
Why they can do Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see what direction they're going to go with. Because
I just, though, I'm so salty about the fact that they're doing character movies about characters that are so intertwined with Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Mm, true,
and
true.
Spider-Man
isn't in any of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he at all, like, referenced or referred to in the Venom movie?
Yeah.
Mm.
Wow.
Well, yeah, he was referenced.
He was?
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're always referenced, but more like allusions and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, kind of like homages,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, Spider-Man wasn't there. So I want to see where they would go with Black Cat and Silver Sable.
Yeah.
Just because they're...
I think that would be really cool. It's kind of like reminiscent of a Harley Ivy kind of team.
Right, right.
Yeah, that I do. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
But they're not going to go with that, so we'll see. And, I mean, it's been... We now have two female-led superhero movies that did big.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Captain Marvel.
Me too.
I was actually surprised by how much I liked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the trailers didn't really help. They was, like, so serious.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she doesn't smile and stuff like that. And then, like, I was all about that. I'm just all like, yeah. But at the same time, I was just all like, can't y'all make a goddamn fucking fun movie? Like, are we going the grim, dark route here? Are we turning the tables to DC? But no, it was really fun. It was super humorous. I really loved Captain Marvel.
Are we turning the tables to DC?
So that's how I took the trailer and stuff like that. And, like, there was a whole drama, but I didn't care about that.
Yeah.
Because it was just dude bros being assholes, as
God,
usual.
Yeah.
But my main problem was that I thought it was going to be, like, a super serious movie along the lines of Infinity War.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it. I did not like Infinity War. I didn't like it. It was predictable. I was not surprised by anything. And everybody who still thinks that everybody's going to be dead, I'm sorry, but you've never picked up a comic book in your life. And I'm going to say it. But either way, I thought that's what it was going to be. But no, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And so, hooray. And it's about to hit the $1 billion mark, I think.
Oh, wow.
Or at least the worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope that at some point they do some kind of girl buddy cop film. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like that.
Well, that's pretty good chisme.
Yeah. It's mostly speculation, but that's what we're here for.
That's what you listen to us for. Mm-hmm. What time is it?
It's hora de la cervecita.
All right. And actually, we're drinking another Mitos Beer Brewery from Nicaragua. We're going on a journey to Nicaragua for these three episodes. My husband brought us a loot of beers. And nice. Today we are drinking.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this.
Oh, my God.
It's called it's from Mitos. It's called Baltic Porter. Inspirado en la historia cervecera. De las orillas del mar Báltico, creamos Mitos Baltic Porter, una cerveza de color oscuro con aroma y sabor a maltas tostadas y acarameladas. Las notas a regaliz, which is licorice, y un toque de vodka dan un completo perfecto sabor.
I'm sorry, ¿un toque de qué?
Vodka. I know. I was really surprised when I read this. So it basically says it's a Baltic porter inspired by the history of beer of the...
Baltic Sea.
Orillas del Baltic Sea, which is the corners of the Baltic Sea. It's a dark beer of aroma and flavor of malts, toasted malts and... caramelized would be caramelized yeah. And notes of licorice. It has a touch of vodka for the perfect flavor. So we'll see about that. We'll see about. I'm willing to try anything beer wise. So we'll see. This is from ingredients from Nicaragua with a Baltic Sea porter thing.
The mention of licorice
right.
Turns my stomach.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to get past the first swallow. That's
you know,
what she
I'm
said.
Looking at the bottle right now.
But I will be open-minded.
Yeah. I was looking at the bottle and I just saw Mitos. And this entire time, every time you said Mitos, I thought you were trying to say Migos.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was just like, why did they name their brewery Migos? But...
It's like myths.
Myths, yeah.
Yeah, no, mitos is myths in Spanish. And the fact that none of you know who Migos is really fucking funny to
What? I don't know. I've heard that before, but I don't know what Migos
Who's Migos?
Is.
Migos?
Yeah. Please teach us. Please tell us.
Migos is a group that does trap music.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. you lost me at trap. All right, let's dive right into
okay,
this.
Okay, so smelling it when I opened it was not pleasant. So I'm hoping that the flavor... And I will also say that I've only learned to appreciate stouts and porters tasting them during this show.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I totally am an IPA girl.
Right.
And... Belgian style beer
and
so the darker stuff isn't that
in the infamous barrel aged
yeah
yes
so let me see It's very weird.
I actually like it.
It's very weird because it, when I drink it, it's like I can tell that it's supposed to be a porter, but it has all the mouthfeel and kind of like even a little bit of flavoring and stuff of not a porter.
Yeah, it's like they took... a light beer, a wheat beer, and basically made it darker.
Yeah, it's really
like food coloring.
Like porter to me is usually not very carbonated.
Not
very carbonated. Okay. I mean, I guess some of them are, but for whatever reason in my mind, that's how. I mean, it's beer. There's carbonation, but this one is very, very, very carbonated. And that's it threw me off.
And that's and so I thought maybe like the one that we reviewed before this, the Amber Red, there was something wrong with the shipment because it came, you know, in luggage on the belly of a plane. So I thought maybe it was an issue, the carbonation was an issue of transportation, but no, this one is carbonated.
Yeah.
And it's from the same brewery. So now I know that there are selected ways that they're wanting to present their beer.
Yeah. So that being said, I also like it. It is light and I don't taste any licorice, so that's a plus.
I think the licorice is just a little subtle.
I don't taste any of it.
I taste it like in the end, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And it's, what is the AVB on this?
Oh, it is also not filtered, and it is 6.5.
Okay. So I think a non-filtered is their the way they're going with their beers, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have some more.
So it is like, I wouldn't say it's like any porter I've had before, but okay, so to me, and it might just be the porters I've had, and I'm a very new to porters, like I said, porters are more like thick.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And like have like a
more viscous
honey mouthfeel to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this isn't that at all. It's very light. Very carbonated, and I don't know what the flavors are that I'm tasting. I don't taste.
Could be the vodka.
I forgot the vodka. Yes, but it's not like vodka. No. It's very little bit.
Yeah. Now that you say that I do kind of get that little bit of taste at the end. Vodka is, people say vodka doesn't have any taste or smell or anything, but
it has taste. It's got a taste.
Most definitely
vodka has a taste. I agree with the smell. You can't really smell vodka, but it has a taste.
But okay, there's a little bit of like toastiness at the end, like literally caramelly. Tasting like toast.
Yes.
But yeah, that's and I like it. I do kind of have a taste of vodka in there. But I definitely think that I would drink this like as a choice when I go to Nicaragua.
Most definitely. And I think we can safely say that this brewery is taking a concept and making it a little lighter for the atmosphere and the weather in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Because it's not the thick and it's not the creamy. It's way lighter. And I don't know, like fresh. It's But I think this vodka really adds a little more to it.
So is it actually vodka added, or it's just the flavor of vodka? I don't know what that even means.
Right. There was very limited amount of description because, you know, here we embedded it's aged in oak,
right.
Barley wine barrels for 2 years. Over there, it's just like, oh, yeah, there's a vodka taste. So I don't know if it's a vodka barrel or a vodka that they added, or
might be that they added vodka.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It does. I do feel it more in my nose, for sure.
Because we had a beer at Henry's event that it was aged in tequila barrels.
Yeah.
So maybe it is vodka.
Or maybe it was it.
Yeah.
You age vodka in barrels, or like
I don't know.
It's vodka.
I just drink it.
Yeah, I just drink it. I feel like it just spawns in my hands at any party. So like it's vodka.
Yeah.
All I know is that it's made from potatoes and its origins in Russia. That's it.
Right.
That's it. That's the extent of my vodka.
So my
knowledge.
Husband Eddie used to work for a Russian boss, and he said that every day for lunch he would force him to do a shot of vodka.
Oh my God. Wow. That's wow. I don't know if I'm sad or happy for him.
Actually, I might be overstating that, but I do remember him saying that he would like force him to drink vodka. I don't know if it was every day, but I'd like to think so.
Wow, that's impressive. Wow, that's crazy too in a sense, but it's cool. So are we ready to rate this?
Yes. So our scale is a 1 to 5 rating, with our lowest rating being a flaccid, and then going to initial, partial, full, and rigid from there, and a super saiyan being off the charts. And I actually would give this a partial.
Me too.
I give it a 3 out of 5 for sure.
Yeah, I give it a partial.
And actually, I just noticed that if you leave it out to get more room temperature, mm-hmm. you get more of the notes, like the toasty notes. Uh-huh. So, yes, I'm going to go partial. I want to go partial and a half because I like this one more than the last one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I definitely like it a lot more than the last one. And I think most of my hangups come up from the fact that I was kind of expecting a coffee taste.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, usually that is what you get from a porter.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that. And I know you don't.
Yeah. So that's probably why I like it. Yeah.
And
so,
you know, they actually grow coffee in Nicaragua, in parts of Nicaragua, and they should take full advantage of that for sure.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think the taste actually comes from coffee beans.
So, oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
I don't think so.
Who knows where it comes from? But I was expecting more coffee taste, but I didn't get that, and that's mildly disappointing. But
just let it sit for a while. I think it will bring those out, those notes. Yeah.
But I do like it a lot more than the other one.
Yes.
And now that I have a frame of reference, this one is definitely not an initial and it's now a partial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that was our beer review. And again, thanks to Mr. Frank for bringing us this beer all the way from Nicaragua.
Mr. Frank.
All right, guys, we are reviewing what book today?
We are reviewing The Girl Who Married a Skull
and Say
Other
what?
African Stories. So this is basically a book of cautionary fables and fairy tales, and it is an anthology series that contains multiple stories. I believe it has...
Jen is counting.
It has 15 stories, about 15 stories, and they are all in black and white, and they all range from kind of a modern setting to like antiquities to even in the future. So they're all adapted African fables.
Yes,
either like African or African American stories. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. It's an all ages book.
Yes.
But I've always really liked mythology and fables.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Folk
me
tales too, yeah. And stuff like that. Mostly because I think it's what we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Tales of like La Llorona. And
Cucuy. Yeah.
El Cucuy.
And stuff like that.
Yes.
Or stories like don't do this because this will happen.
Yes.
Or kind of cautionary tales and stuff like that. And that's what.
Pepito.
The stories of Pepito. Oh, like, yes. How has Pepito fucked up this many times?
I've never heard Pepito.
Oh my God. We're going to go into that.
Enlighten her, please.
Well, Pepito is this little kid, and he's constantly told to do things or not to do things, but he always chooses the wrong one. Uh-huh. So Pepito's always in trouble. And there's several different stories, and it's word of mouth stories. So as time goes on, and as you pass him from generation to generation, it changes slightly. So I'm really struggling to think of one. But I think one of them was about him buying carbonato. But it's... I'd have to dig into my memories. But yeah, it's like sending him to the store to go get something and he comes back with something totally different.
I've never heard of Pepito before.
Oh, yeah.
And when you said Pepito, you know, my mind went totally somewhere else.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, like, no, I grew up with stories like that and stuff like that. He went to, his mom sent him off to the store to buy a loaf of bread, but he comes back with goat's balls or something.
Yeah.
That's exactly how.
And then the herds of goats come and like carry him away or something, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. And it's just stories like that evolve as the time goes on, and that honestly parents themselves can readapt,
right,
or retell or make up entire new ones, and then like that's what people hear, and then the kids go off to school and repeat the story,
right,
and stuff like that. And that is living folklore,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And this is what this is,
right,
as well. So we have ours, but these are all like African American stories and stuff like that. Basically, Black cultural folk tales that have grown up. Everyone has kind of grown up hearing about them.
Yeah.
Or maybe not if we're not in the culture itself. Because right. a lot of these were new to me, but some of them I'd heard, like the Anansi one.
I've heard a few of them too. So.
And then Anansi himself is a character that has many stories.
Yeah.
Right.
That I don't think there's like a full comprehensible list of all the Anansi stories.
Yeah.
Because again, he's also part of that kind of oral folktale mm-hmm. story of like can be repeated, or like he's the Pepito of. of the black community, in mm-hmm. that like don't do this because yeah. I'm not like this is what Anansi did, and Anansi himself is kind of like a trickster god
right,
as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But depending on the light, he's like super smart and witty and mm-hmm. clever and can one up people, and in others he gets too big for his britches and is punished
right
and mm-hmm. or like basically mm-hmm. he manipulates himself. To be in these situations that then come crashing down upon him.
And the Anansi story actually in the book is written by a Latino creator. Mm-hmm. His name is Jose Pimienta.
Yeah.
And he actually is the one who wrote that particular one.
And Pimienta means pepper.
Yeah.
We've come full circle, guys.
Yeah.
I totally love this book. I love the fact that it's in white, black and white. There's different artists, there's different writers adapting these stories. So it's amazing. And you know what I really love about this book is they take a story from that's been passed down for many years and they give it a new twist. Mm-hmm. Like the dialogue in it is very current. And yes. I mm-hmm. love that. I can't tell you. The first story made me laugh.
I like.
Oh yeah.
I had a couple that really like.
Yes.
Were like my quote unquote favorites, but the first one was I think a really good opening to the book.
Oh, yeah.
And for them to choose that, which is the it was the title one, right? The
yes.
Girl the Who girl, Married a Skrull.
Yes. It was the artwork was really great. It was a very. Clean lines, expressive faces, it sort of maybe a little homage to Jap anime too, a little bit, tiny bit. I think there's a strong influence there. But the story itself was really great. Really, really. And it's, what do you call, you call it something realism? You guys use that a lot?
Surrealism?
No. When it's... Fantastical realism. Uh-huh. Yeah. I really love that aspect of that particular story.
Mm-hmm.
I love them all. I love the one with the lion and
yeah.
the wife.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. that was...
The girl who married the lion.
No, this was Wait. The woman who was trying to...
Oh, the lion's whiskers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that one. I love the art in that one. Mm-hmm. And I love the actual message it had at the end. Where she was already capable of doing what
yes.
she was asking him to do.
Right.
And I love that because it sometimes you seek help, but it's already inside you. You mm-hmm. just need somebody to let you know that you can do it on your own.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
What other stories? Oh, I like the one about Ra. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That one was really, really amazingly drawn. I love the detail. I love the little details in the background. It was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story that I think we've heard before.
Yeah.
But in this, the way they were representing it here, I thought was amazing. And it was, mm-hmm. It was a new take on it. So
yeah, which is actually a kind of a cool point is that I think a lot of these quote unquote, because it does say a cautionary fairy, was it fairy?
Fable and fairy tale
book.
Mm-hmm.
All cultures, I think, have stories like this that they share to like warn the next generation coming up, you know, you better not do this or this will happen. And I was very surprised at how many of them did seem familiar to me.
Mm-hmm. There's a thing about that though, is that folk tales, a lot of folk like oral stories and stuff mm-hmm. like that, there are some stories that are repeated in every culture.
Right.
The most common one and the one that is seen, to date, like people who have been recording like folk tales and stuff like that and folklore and stuff like that, every culture has a Cinderella story. Oh. No matter what, uh-huh. in every culture. In
Mariela del Barrio?
No, just kidding. In Mexican folklore, like Guatemalan Mayan yeah. folklore, and like basically anywhere in the world that has been recorded, there is a Cinderella story. Mm-hmm. In one of the major like African ones, I think it's West African. It's either West African or Sub-Saharan Africa tale. It's about the girl with the cat's dress or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just basically this girl. She doesn't want to get married. I think she wants to get married, and so she goes and looks for a favor and stuff like that. Which I'm actually surprised this didn't adapt that one, mm-hmm. but it could be because it's a Cinderella story and we've seen it 5 million times.
Yeah,
and they maybe wanted to go with lesser known ones mm-hmm. as well. Because some of these I didn't know mm-hmm. At all. But the Cinderella one, it's a girl who finds basically like a panther and hunted down and makes a dress out of its fur mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and she uses that, and it's such a strange and odd choice for her to wear as a dress, but then slowly over time that dress transforms into something beautiful mm. and it's just like her going on a journey and stuff yeah. like that, and basically it's a Cinderella story mm-hmm. and you can find that's what I find really cool is that there's just these stories that seem to resonate in yeah. every culture, and they're completely separate. They're completely and utterly separate. Like these cultures, these stories grew apart kind of separate. Even then, not really because of between trade and stuff like that, mm-hmm. stories were exchanged and stuff like that. But the fact that every culture has a Cinderella story of that is like that, it means like there's some cultural similarities
right.
there that can be found. And you can kind of explore the role of women and how antiquity saw women mm-hmm. in these roles, or what made a woman powerful or desirable and stuff like right. that. And that's what I've found fascinating about folklore and stuff like that, and how you can readapt that to something else mm-hmm. in the modern world. And that's what folktales are all about, is readaptation. There is no true interpretation of a tale, even though people sometimes insist.
Yeah.
No, these are living legends mm-hmm. in that they will adapt with the times. So I think it's cool that we can have like the old ones that have been that as far back as that we can tell, like the oldest version of it, and to see kind of how it's been, how the role of the women has changed to now where they've keep readapting stuff like Snow White or like Cinderella and stuff like that in pop culture, and see how it has changed.
Whoa. I learned a lot right there. No, but yeah, and I'm glad that they can actually adapt these stories and put them in a book form to share with everyone in all cultures.
Yeah,
and it's all ages, so it invites a bigger, larger audience.
That's what I was gonna say. It's all ages, and it could definitely, I think, would be an amazing beginning of a conversation with an adult and a child, where they're sharing it, and then the adult, you know, sharing maybe some of the folk tales that they heard as a child.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I like the fact that the length of each story, because mm-hmm. it could be like a book you buy and you can read a story per bedtime.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that mm-hmm. that's exactly the feeling I got when I was reading it in bed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is perfect.
And the description on the back says, "Welcome to Africa's Once Upon a Time." So I thought that was
cute.
Cool. Yeah,
that was really cute. And then, Sarah, you mentioned your favorite stories. I know that you like the lion's whiskers and stuff like that.
Yes.
And I like the art style for that one. It was mm-hmm. very cutesy.
Yes.
But the story itself was very sweet as well.
Yeah.
In that there's this woman, and she's having basically
marital issues.
And so she goes to a medicine man mm-hmm. and she's like, "Give me a love potion so that he can fall in love with me again, to like revive the spark." And he's just all like, "No, like, yeah, I can do that, but like, that's a powerful potion. I'm gonna need you to get me some ingredients for it." And so she goes off, and she and it's dangerous because the ingredient needed is the whisker of a lion, mm-hmm. of a living lion. So, like, you can't just, like, find a dead lion and pick off his whiskers. No, it has to be from a live lion. And she goes off and she basically keeps leaving out treats for the lion until she can approach him and then pluck a whisker off of him. And then she goes back to the medicine man and he's just like, I have it. And then he laughs and he's just like, I can make the potion for you. But he's just like, but you created you spent all this time and dedication earning the trust of this lion. Mm-hmm. Why can't you do that with your husband? Mm-hmm. And I was just all like, shit, that's deep. I had a moment. I was just all like, God damn. Right? And that's why they're cautionary fables and stuff like that. If you can do something like this, why can't you apply it to other aspects of your life?
One of the things I like was she's like, well, I know what the lion wants. Mm-hmm. He wants food. So that's what I gave him to earn his trust. She goes, but I don't know what my husband wants. She goes, well, why don't you ask him? Mm-hmm. And she's all like, I can't ask him. That'll put me in a vulnerable position. And he said, sometimes it's shows a sign of bravery to be the first to ask. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn. I just learned this in a comic book.
A child's tale.
I'm like, whoa.
And I like that about them is because this folktales, they're just... I think modern times and like the Western world has made it so that these tales are for children. Mm-hmm. When I don't think that's true. Right. I think they can be applied to adults as well in everyday. Because as adults, I think sometimes we forget the simple, like it was supposed to be simple lessons and stuff like that, that we preach to children and stuff like that. But then sometimes we don't follow them either.
Yeah.
As well. And so kind of like even the story with the girl with the skull, the main one, like her parents were telling like, don't go off with this dude.
Right, yeah.
And she's just like, I'm going to go off with him.
Yeah.
And then in the end, she's just like, oh shit, maybe I should have listened to that.
Right.
But then at the same time, she's just like, but like, I want to have my own life and do what I want. And in the end, she's just like, I'm not going to go back to my parents. But it's with a different frame of light. And she makes the best of her situation as well. And I like that, too.
Yeah.
That is 100% a readaptation. Because that story would have ended with her going back to her parents.
Being
like, oh, whoops.
You were right.
You were right. And stuff like that.
It does not only teach you that. So for her, that she had many admirers because she's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of like, I felt like she was sick of only being loved or coveted because of her looks. Mm-hmm. Yet when she met this guy, she was all about him because of his looks.
Yeah,
because
when he asked her, why'd you marry me? She was like, well, that's besides the point.
Yeah, it was definitely like she kind of got a taste of her own medicine in that as well in the story. So it had multiple levels of learning about what not to do and maybe following your heart and then maybe... You know, it being the wrong choice because you followed your eyes instead of your heart. And then in the end, where she was like, I want to travel. I thought that was great. But you're right. It would have ended with her returning to her parents.
Yeah. And that's how you can see like the readaptation. Not only that, because the story obviously takes place in more of a modern setting.
Right.
As well. And then it like switches over to kind of like an antiquated setting as well.
Yeah.
But that could be said the same for all the books. Some of them take place, like you can obviously tell they take place in the future or in the past or some weird state in between the past and the present as well. Personally, my favorite stories were Isis and the Name of Ra.
I love that one.
And Chief Five Heads. Those were, I really like that. So in Isis and the Name of Ra, the goddess herself, she wants to find out the true name of Ra, the god of the sun, and like basically the king of the gods. So she devises this intricate plan where she creates a snake that
has the essence of Ra.
Has the essence of Ra.
Because Ra cannot be, he's almighty. Smite him.
Yeah, the other gods can't defeat him or have power over him. Only he himself can. So she like creates a whole ass like complicated plan to get his name, and she succeeds.
She does.
It's just like, but the fact that she did all of this and like the kind of like how like smart and intelligent and manipulative she could be just for this, so that she could have this power, I was just like, damn, sis, go for it. Like, holy
the
crap.
The cool thing is that she uses that power for nurturing.
Yeah.
So it's mm-hmm. not like she takes the power and, like, you know, burns the world down. No, she mm-hmm. takes it and she actually becomes a very renowned and beloved god because she used her power for good. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like how it turned on you. Like, you thought, oh, you know, she wants the power. She's, mm-hmm. you know, she may be manipulative and, you know, she created this whole plan to mm-hmm. take down Ra or whatever. But in the end, she used it for good. So, yeah. So he wasn't really doing anything with it.
Yeah, that's basically it. Like, she wasn't, that's what you get from the story, is that Ra wasn't really doing, he had all this right. power, but it was like wasting yeah. away pretty much. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, you know what? You know who can use that? Me. I can do it, and I can do it better. And she did. Uh-huh. And she did. And she used it for her son, Horus, and everything. So it was, I really liked that story. And just I liked how it.
And the art was amazing.
The art was really good yeah. for it as yeah. well. The reason I like Chief Five Heads is because it was about kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there is a Russian folk tale that is along those lines as well. That involves two sisters.
Oh, cool.
One that's kind of mean and evil and cruel,
mm-hmm.
and one who's like sweet and like nice and stuff like that. So, and like the mean one goes off on a journey and mistreats like everybody who's trying to help her out.
Right.
And then she gets punished for it in the end, and then the sister goes off. Like the plot turns out the same, except in the Russian one, it's her helping out an older woman, and basically. Getting like riches and basically like enabling her to be better off in life.
Yeah.
And whereas the African one is about her marrying mm-hmm. a chief mm-hmm. and basically marrying higher up
right.
Than her station and stuff like that. So, but I really liked it either way. And it kind of had a Beauty and the Beast vibe yeah, to it as yeah. well. And I'm 100% yeah. a sucker for that. I don't know why. Yeah. I like love that those. One too. I fucking love those stories.
Did you have a favorite one, Kristen?
Well, I really liked the main title one, The Girl Who Married a Skull. I really liked the art. I liked... There was a lot of like quippy likeness, and she was very like attitude-y. I really love that liked too. It.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't remember which one it was called. But it was a brother and sister. Oh who yeah, were I was just from thinking the about cannibals.
That. Yes, I yes. was just thinking about that
yeah.
one.
It was Demane and Demazana.
Uh huh.
And I like that yeah, one too. Yeah,
the two kids who were off living on their own.
Yeah,
and
they escaped an abusive home.
Yes,
which they, I thought right, was right.
they escaped yeah. an abusive home. And then they made their own home. And then the sister got kidnapped by a cannibal.
Yeah.
And then they had to outsmart him.
Yes.
And it was fun. It was cute.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was kind of like, it was also very independent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because mm-hmm. yeah. you escaped a bad situation and you made a good of it. But then you got into another one, but you escaped that too. And yeah. life goes on.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Because there was even a part there where they're like, we should have never left. Because
mm-hmm.
At least then we knew what was coming mm-hmm. and we could just have dealt with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but then they realized that, no, that they didn't deserve to be there. And mm-hmm. that even though this was hard, that they had the strength to also survive that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the art for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
I mean, all the artwork for this was really good.
Even mm-hmm. though you guys know that I hate black and white.
Yes.
The entire book was in black and white, but after a while, I didn't notice it anymore. And mm-hmm. yeah, the art was really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I really liked the endearing tale of Thunder and Lightning.
Oh.
That one I really, and I love the art for it as yeah. well. So I.
That one was cute.
Yeah, I thought it was really cute.
I like origin myths and yeah. stuff like that. It's just like, we get a lot of those, and how this one is specifically how Thunder and Lightning came to yeah. be. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ones that seemed familiar to me, that I've heard something yeah. similar yeah. to how Thunder and Lightning have became mm-hmm. into existence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, and I've heard many, many stories for it, but you're. The why it seemed familiar to me is that it was a mother and a son.
Yes.
And that seems mm-hmm. to be one that I've heard a lot.
Yeah.
That it's always like a mother and a son. That the reason they like it rains is because a mother is crying and stuff like that. Or like the reason thunder and lightning exists is because in the case of this one, it's the mom chasing after her
her son,
lightning, who causes
a lot of havoc,
mischief. A lot of havoc and mischief and stuff like that. And we get there's a lot of origin myths and stuff, like about the rainbow and stuff like that. If the Bible, it was the arc between Noah and God, how there were never the world wouldn't be destroyed by a flood. That is a myth. That is a kind of an origin myth of why rainbows exist. But there's also the Irish one, that it's where a leprechaun
hides his gold.
His pot of gold. At the end of, at the end of a rainbow is where the leprechaun hides his gold. And there is another one that is about it being an archway to enter the realm of the gods and stuff like that. And then there's the readaptation that we get in, even in stuff like comics. In that a rainbow is the bridge. Bifrost.
Yeah.
The rainbow Care bridge.
The Care Bears?
In Thor.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I was going to Care Bears and My Little Pony for some reason. I don't know.
Where there are a lot of rainbows and pink involved in both of them. But that's I really like stories like that. They're just really cool, and you don't realize that you know kind of all these stories until you're until either a kid asks you a question or you yourself are just like you're thinking about it and you're like, huh, I remember that one story about like stuff like that. And I think that's cool. It's just it's stuff that you get told and you don't recall it until you have to explain it, and then all of a sudden you're spilling out a story that was told to you when you were five.
Well, are we ready to rate this book?
All
right, well, this is Sarah, and I'm gonna go tres conchas because I really really love it, and it's something you could read your kid at bedtime, and I thought the artwork was sensational.
This is Kristen. I also am giving it three conchas. I really liked it a lot. I also love that it's an all ages book. And as an adult, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't read it to anybody and I enjoyed it. but I really love also learning about other cultures. And this is a fun way to do that.
Nice.
Yeah. And this is Jen, and I'm giving it three conchas because I absolutely adore fables and folktale and fairy tales. But this one, it's a good book. The artwork is really cute. You can enjoy it for yourself and kind of see a vision or like a reminder, nostalgia value.
Yeah.
For those who grew up with fairy tales and stuff like that. And then it's just like, it's something that you can enjoy yourself to.
Yeah.
Excellent. That was our beer. That was our book review, guys. Now it's time for On My Radar. And this is Sarah, and I'll bring you On My Radar today. And On My Radar is comic book creator Calvin Nye. Calvin Nye has a self-published comic book called Joe Hero. And Joe Hero is basically an autistic superhero. And he has three comic books out right now. The first one's called Heroic Legacy, where we are introduced to Joe and how he becomes a hero, or he's trying to be a hero. He actually has two parents who are heroes. It's Awesome Man and Star Woman. So I really, when I first read issue one, you get to see actually when he was diagnosed with autism. You get to read the language that is related to when a kid gets diagnosed with autism, and sort of why they were worried that there was something wrong with him. And I thought that was really relevant. My brother's autistic, so I felt I had that conversation with my dad as well. So I thought it was a great way to shine the light on how kids can be on the spectrum and how parents struggle to find out what is going on with their kid at an early age. So I really loved issue number one. It really hooked me. And then issue two and three just followed along with the struggles of him trying to connect with the outside world and trying to save it. But at the same time, how they can misunderstand his wanting to help, and how he himself had to learn about how it is that he could do his job better. So he kind of is a rogue hero, and there's also a little underlying story about kind of like a sort of like the Justice League, sort of, where it's this kind of association, or not company, but a group of people who determine who can be superheroes. And so with him, because of his disability, they want to not give him that option. They want to take it away. And there's an injection that he can have to remove his superhero powers. So there's a story there. And I don't want to spoil it, but it's really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I wouldn't normally pick up. Mm-hmm. But when I did, it was amazing. And actually, I met Calvin Nye at... we actually were in behind him in a table at Long Beach Comic Con, the first one I believe we tabled at.
Okay.
And this is how I met him. We put up our banner, and I think it was obstructing some of his path.
Oh,
And so he's like, "Can you move your banner?" And I was like, "Oh, what? Okay, fine." So like, and I'm like, you know, but when I saw him the second time at Long Beach Comic Expo this year, well, he told me about his superhero, and I really wanted to buy the comic book because my brother's autistic, but I wasted all my money, so I ended up not buying anything. And I got his card, and I meant to go onto the website and get his comic, and I just never did. So when I saw him at Long Beach Comics Expo, I was walking to go get food, and he's like, "Hey, how are you doing?" And then I was like, "Hi, have we met?" And he goes, "Yeah, we were at the Long Beach Comics Expo last year. And I had the comic book about the autistic superhero." I'm like, "Oh my God, yes, I remember you. How are you?" And he was very nice. And he's like, I go, "I want to buy your comic book." And he's like, "Well, which one do you want? I have all of them. Which one did you stop at?" And I said, "I'd never picked up any because I ran out of money, but I have money today and I'm taking all three." Mm-hmm. So I took all three, and I did an interview of him that I posted on the Facebook. And actually, that's where I learned that he's on the spectrum as well.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why he wrote this comic book story.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So he's actually local. He's from Ventura, California.
That's local.
Well, it's not Chicago. Chicago.
He's that's local more to, Santa Barbara to it, me.
I was going
to
say, that's he's local to California.
Yeah. California, but, that's what I meant.
Not
yeah.
LA.
not LA, but he was raised by a family of artists. He was actually named after Calvin and Hobbes,
the comic strip. Oh, that's so cute!
So I thought that was, and there's a reference to that in the comic book too, so I thought that was super cute.
Uh-huh.
He actually has a BA in art with an emphasis on art history. So he self-published and released three books, and I believe there's going to be a fourth. I'm not sure if this is going to be like a ongoing story or if it's just maybe a 10-issue story, but it's really good. I did not think I would enjoy it as much as I did. And for me to have learned in that interview that he's on the spectrum and he's doing this, and it's amazing to me. So if you guys are out there, you can pick up his work at www.calvin9comics.com. So that's Calvin, C-A-L-V-I-N, Nye is N-Y-E, comics.com. That's Calvin. So that's two N's back to back, calvin9comics.com. So I hope you guys pick up this book. I really, 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 really loved it. And he actually signed mine. Or if you're at a convention, I know there's some that he goes locally to. So if you're there, you definitely can meet him there and have him sign your copy. So that's what's on my radar.
Awesome.
And now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes.
Okay, so this is Kristen, and as you know, Juntos y Fuertes is a segment where we give information out to support other marginalized individuals or groups that have amazing projects that they're working on. And today, the thing that I want to share with you all is something that when I saw, I was like, "Oh my God, that sounds amazing." The only sadness about it is that I don't live in Chicago, because that's where this takes place. this. But if you do not already know, there is something called WakandaCon.
What?
It's
nice.
It's going to be taking place in Chicago, July 26th through 28th this year. So there's plenty of time for you to plan to go. But it is a three-day celebration of Afrofuturistic art, technology, community, cosplay, and self-expression. It made its debut last summer in 2018. It's a family-friendly convention, and it will be at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place in Chicago.
That is so awesome. I actually first heard about WakandaCon from the podcast, the Negro Justice League. Mm-hmm. And I've talked about them before on the podcast, but they came out with these shirts called the Negro Justice League. Yeah. It was on a black t-shirt with like purple, white, and white letters. Mm-hmm. And actually they commented on how everybody loved their t-shirts.
Yeah, I bet.
They also were on a panel there. So they were really deep into the WakandaCon. So when I heard of their experience and how much fun it was and how it was such an amazing event to be at, I was like, I need to be there.
Oh, wait, so this isn't the first time?
No, this is the second.
This will be the second year. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so WakandaCon founder David Barthwell said about the event, "We are inspired to create something more than a fandom convention. WakandaCon is about art, culture, tech, and self-expression, but also about showcasing dreams, aspirations, and authentic representation of Black people."
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the pictures they took were super cool. I'll post the link up to their page on the pictures they took at WakandaCon. But I was like, oh my God. And I think they had video of the panel they were at, but they're all scientists.
Uh-huh.
It's really crazy sometimes, because sometimes I'm like, oh my God, guys, you're talking over my head again. But I think their panel was more based on kind of the scientific question. I have to look back into it, but it wasn't like fandom stuff. Uh-huh. I was like, oh my God, am I even gonna understand that?
It could be fandom stuff. When we went at Long Beach, they had the physics of Pacific Rim.
Oh my God, that was so cool. Love that panel.
That was good. So yes, it was nerdy, but it was also like kind of, they had like actual like
scientists up there.
And like professors and stuff like that talking about physics.
Yeah.
And how much you would need to like to actually make this happen, or how it could happen and stuff like that. So it could be something like that.
Like the biomechanics too, of ingesting so much food in order to, it was, to power such a big creature. It was way over my head at times. I was like, whoa. But yeah, I mean, bridging that gap of fandom with science, I think is amazing. And they're doing this at WakandaCon too.
Yes, and you can find out more information on their website, which is WakandaConForever.com.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. Oh, that's cool. I'm glad they got that name.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, guys, and that brings us to saludos. And saludos goes out today to Isabel Quintero, who just got a shipment of Mi Papi Has a Motorcycle, which is the second project she worked with Zeke, who, if you guys remember, is the artist who drew for the comic
graphic memoir of
Graciela Iturbide.
Yeah.
Yes. So saludos to her and congratulations on receiving her book. And you probably can find it at all regular bookstores as well. I think she got the shipment for like the appearances she's going to be at. But
it looks so cute. We saw a little copy of it, and the story is inspired by her own experiences of taking motorcycle rides with her father after work, and I thought that was cute.
Yeah, and it actually takes place in Corona, California.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
So anyway, saludos to her and congratulations on receiving your books. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of this episode, and we have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
And you guys can find us on Facebook at Comadres y Comics on Facebook.
Facebook is Comic Comadres.
Oh, snaps. Comic Comadres. See?
Oof. And Instagram is Comadres y Comics.
And on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
And you can always email us at comadresycomics@gmail.com. Well, that brings us to the end. Thank you so much for listening. Bye. Bye.